Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional, unprofessional. So if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hey, good morning.
Good afternoon.
Good evening.
And good night.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Juan Epp is Life.
Shout out my good friends. Matt and Caitlin from the Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina area. Big Juan Epp fans. Well, I told you about them before. They saved Damani's life when he passed out at a club from back pain. And she jumped in there, the nurse aristocrat that she is, and started checking his pulse. They got engaged. Our Juan Epp fans, our Juan Eppers got engaged.
Good for them. And you love those people.
Love them. So we're supportive of what we do, of the nonsense we put together every week. So supportive. So wow. Congratulations. They've been together, I think, I want to say 29 years. And they finally, I don't know who did it.
Wait.
I don't know if he got down.
Wait.
Yeah.
Wait.
Yeah.
29 years?
It's an exaggeration for. They've been together a long time and haven't been married or engaged. And
I believed you.
I'm assuming he popped the question, but she's an independent, modern cosmopolitan woman. She might have popped the question. I don't know. She might have said enough of this bullshit. But either way, they went on their Instagrammies and said they were engaged. And they took a beautiful engagement picture, an Instagram picture in their car.
Okay, I'm so happy.
Okay,
for these people.
Yeah, Matt and Caitlin.
Matthew and Kara. Matt and Caitlin.
Yeah,
Matt and Caitlin. Juan Epps for life. Do they want us to come to the wedding?
I would assume that because we've made their relationship so great, they would invite us. But you know, you never know nowadays. People are shitty.
Wow, that's really.
I'm not saying they are shitty. I'm saying people are shitty, and they might fall into a shitty mood one day. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited because I feel like I know Roy, but I don't remember how or if I really do.
He has that effect on people. Even if you never met him, he has a. I know this guy. He's a good guy.
I just feel I could be wrong. First of all. He has a brand new special on Comedy Central right now, yeah. Imperfect Messenger, which is phenomenal. And it is, can people just go stream this whenever they want to?
You can stream it on Comedy Central's website and the Comedy Central app. God bless you. I'm sorry. The commercials are not my fault.
Okay. And by the way, how did you show up and already have a better mic than Syph on our own podcast? How did that happen?
Oh, this is Viacom money, baby. Daily show from home for a year. They send us all the good shit.
Oh, you got the good shit, baby. Oh,
dude, I'm laced. I could probably shoot a movie but have the shit Trevor sent to this house.
That's fantastic. Are you guys back?
Yeah, we're in studio. You know, we moved to Times Square, dude.
Bro, the new show is this more living room feel.
That's what they wanted. They wanted to continue the home feel, but from a studio. So
Trevor's at home talking very casually.
Yeah, I mean, more people are coming in studio. I think they're going to start experimenting with audiences at the top of the year. We did a couple of test shows. There's still no audience, just on a regular night. We've been doing test shows with an audience. The studio's smaller, so it's weird because you know how it is, dog. When it's a smaller crowd, the jokes hit different.
Yeah. Yep.
So when you go from 250 to 60, it's just a totally different feel to how the jokes perform, which changes.
What about have you ever tried how jokes hit when you're doing a show at Complex and the audience is 12 interns who are just forced to be there?
Ooh, that sounds like Vice Live. And I can say that with respect because I talked to some of the comedians that worked on that show and that were comedic guests on that show. And they were like, oh, yeah, half the audience on Vice Live was the staff of Vice.
Yeah, yeah, that's what a lot of places do when they need bodies and seats. Well, hold on. It sounds like what you're experiencing right now is the most like corporate-y, TV-ish or radio shit where it's like, we want to do this. We're trying to do the exact same thing, except we want to switch it up. Does anyone raise their hand and go, hey, so why don't we just keep doing the shit from home if that's the feel that we're going for? Makes sense.
That was brought up. But I think that the issue was figuring out crew and staff, man. You got to work people. You got to, like, the Daily Show at High Tide was employing almost 90 people.
Mm.
So.
And you just don't have that many people needed if you're doing it from home. That's got to be way more.
And I'll give Trevor props on trying to, you know, take care of folks and shit like that. But the ratings were higher when we were at home. We didn't lose numbers during the shutdown. So they were going, oh, well, maybe people enjoyed this homely feel and Trevor with a scraggly beard. So let's do that under $30,000 cameras and beautiful lights.
Right. Square. And just fine budgets. Right.
Also, a lot of people were at home. So it's like it balances out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'll be honest. I'm not. It's taken some getting used to as a comic to perform in front of 250 people in the studio every night. To nobody, like at the house, it was expected, but the studio has a hollowness to it that feels like an open mic that nobody showed up to.
Right. Yeah. That's weird. Yeah.
And you have to perform through the camera, and then online, people go, "Oh, that was funny," and I'm going, "Well, I had no idea."
Yeah. Yeah. As a comic, but mind you, when I say me and Roy, when I say we, he is the top of the mountain.
Where are you?
I'm like at the airport in an Uber on the way to the mountain. You know what I mean? Right. Like I'm not even at the base camp yet.
You can't even see the mountain that he's at the top of.
I don't even, the mountain's a 30, 40 minute
drive. You're
too
hard on yourself.
But no, I'm not too hard on myself. I'm telling you, the audience, that this man here is a comedic fucking genius.
Woo.
What we do is based on the way we think of jokes is based on putting in the time for the laughs.
Right.
If there's nobody there. See, the difference is because you did radio also, right, Roy?
Yeah, yeah. 10 years down south.
Like the pandemic for me when I had to do Zoom shows, the first two were rough. And then after that, I just switched into my radio mind.
Yes.
And I wasn't necessarily doing stand-up jokes that I would do in a stand-up club. I was kind of doing more like radio-ish material.
You're doing a talk break. You're just a
exactly. Full-blown. And all the other comics I would be on the show with were like, man, you're really good at this. And I'm like, I had years of no audience reaction instantly.
Yeah, you know, just the phone lines lighting up. That's all you, that was an applause break.
Yeah.
As if the phone lines, I must be saying something that's resonating with people.
That's right.
I did two Zoom shows and I was done. But nah, dog, your brain works in a...
Yeah.
Yo,
this man gave, Cypher gave me one of the wildest tags, just as an aside, just a quick tag. It's one of those jokes that I know 4 months from now I'll never do again, but I'm just trying to figure out ways to frame Ghislaine Maxwell as the ultimate ride or die chick.
Oh, yeah. Are you talking about the other night?
And oh my God, yeah. It's just, it's so wrong of a bit, but Cypher just walks past me and the bit just bombed in front of like these Brooklyn kombucha motherfuckers. And Cypher just walks up to me and just mumbles a tag and then just walks. It was like that scene in, Social Network where the guy tells Mark Zuckerberg,
"Take off,
drop the and just Facebook. Much cleaner." And then he just walked away. And then I did it at my next set and then it killed. I'm like, oh no.
Yo, so that's great. Do you, Roy, I have, by the way, the main thing I want to do today is talk about some hip hop stuff with you.
Oh, if dude.
If you're down for it.
We can do that all day. I did urban radio
That's what I'm saying. So, particularly when I tell you the angle of where I want to go, I think there couldn't be a better guest than you today.
Yeah,
okay. But I do want to ask you before that, because like one thing that I hope I can convey this in a way that makes sense.
I won't be offended.
No, I'm not worried about that. I am simultaneously annoyed with the fear that all performers, comedians, radio hosts, et cetera, I'm annoyed by the fear that we have to have now that even something that you know is not immoral, is not harmful, we have to worry that all of those lines could be problematic for us. Like, that annoys me.
Oh, yeah, but there's more mines in the minefield.
But I'm also then simultaneously annoyed by the level of complaining that there is about said issue. So I am like,
yes,
I hate it all. I hate the fear of being canceled, and I hate the obsession with quote cancel culture, which doesn't really cancel that many people. So do you know what I'm saying, Roy? Yeah, I find it all to be fucking annoying.
Go ahead, Syfe.
No, I'm gonna
let
like,
you flow on this first.
I just real quick, I just want to say, some comics like, I can't say anything anymore. I'm like, bro, you wasn't saying anything before.
Exactly. Man, just be funny and shut the fuck up. You'll be all right.
Here's something that maybe Cypher can help me unpack to that point.
Yeah.
Right? When the Dave shit first jumped off, we're talking The Closer, we're talking 3 days, let's just go 3 days after it airs. The think pieces are starting to flow. Netflix employees are starting to bubble. And there was gangs of comedians who were posting and going, I stand with Dave. You know, and I know, and Kevin Hart more recently he's doing interviews for True Story or whatever. And comedians were going, I'm with Dave. And I was like, okay, but what are we standing with him against? Like, because I support the idea that a performer has a right to say whatever they want to say on stage, full stop. I support that. Boom. So far, from what I can tell, that right has not been infringed upon for anybody. Right. So, what are we standing against exactly?
Right, right.
And that's what I can't put my finger on. It's like, it's this weird, it's like a vapor. It's not a tangible problem. It's like, no one's going to jail. Niggas say some shit that piss niggas off, and them niggas have a right to say that they ain't like what that nigga said. That's the game. This democracy seems to be running smoothly. As far as I can tell.
But and they wouldn't have had that reaction that I stand with Dave if these other people didn't have a problem with what he said, which of course they're going to have a problem with what he said. But now it's like, so are you standing up against that community?
And that's the problem. Because some people know that you're joining up with a whole bunch of people who are going, I stand with Dave Chappelle.
Yeah, that's a whole different group of people. Yeah,
exactly.
Yes, and that's the problem with short phrase activism, that you start putting stand with him, abolish this. And it's like you start looping in yourself with all of the phrases and you remove the nuance from the conversation.
Yes.
It's pick a side every time, every issue. It's like, pick your side. I'm like, well, I kind of see both sides.
Yo,
what are you against? What are you against? Are you against people saying that they didn't like something? People have a right to not like some shit. It happens all the time. Check your YouTube comments, coach. Somebody don't fuck with you.
It's so true, man. I've on this particular issue, I go on the radio and at the radio station and in interviews, I have generally been the person who's being harder on Dave, who is being very sensitive to the way I think he handled the trans stuff, because I see what they're saying. There were moments when I too felt like, I don't know. I support their right to be annoyed by that. I also don't think that someone should have walked out and not let him have a special. By the way, what did Netflix do? They said, all right, be walk out all you want. We're not canceling the special. So nothing bad happened. Like, and the fact of the matter is, and this is important. I had this argument with DL Hughley last week on the show. What I tried to explain was no matter how people frame it, we're having a conversation now with trans people where trans people end up being sort of at the root of an argument that should really be had with the white man. And it ends up being had with the trans community instead. And here's the problem. The trans community is a community that is still in danger in America, much like black people in America. They have actual threats and harm that can come upon them. So we have to be mindful about the conversation and not act as if they're simply a powerful Hollywood entity that will fuck you up if you say the wrong thing. Because that's not really who I care about. I worry about the common tide changing because of those people that we talked about who had never liked Dave Chappelle until they heard he's being critical of the trans community.
Now they like Dave Chappelle.
That's the problem.
Yeah, there's this issue as well where, for me, with the comedy community, it's, well, y'all are trying to cancel Dave, but this is all corporate. This is all corporations.
Yeah.
Corporation wants to make money. So a corporation is going to decide the quickest way to make money is to get your ass up out the square. Oh, you tweeted what? Bet we'll recast you right quick. Mm-hmm. That's not them taking a real moral stance. That's them doing what helps them make money.
100%. I say this all the time.
So that's the shit you should be standing against. Is the corporation should have a moral backbone and you should support the artists and the artists, right? Don't employ artists if you're not going to back what the artist decides to say, you know, on your network. And to me, that's something worth standing. Like, I understand what communities are saying when they say that they stand against. What you're saying is Dave had a right to say. Dave had a right to say without people taking money out of his pocket. But if Dave has a right to say, they have a right to say.
Right.
And so far, that's all I've seen happening. It's spitting.
So no, but taking stuff
I don't need to jump
Dave
in that like shit. Yeah. Don't fucking DM me going, when you gonna put up your post? This nigga ain't in jail.
Yeah.
This nigga's at his high school arguing with his alma mater. He's fine.
He's with Sife at the garden. He's cool.
He's fine. Yo, the thing you said earlier, I always find it funny when like someone gets in trouble for like saying the N-word somewhere, right? And they get fired or removed from their sponsorship deal or whatever. And I'm like, he just got fired by another guy who always says the N-word. But the thing is, they have to show that they don't support this behavior. And he's like, I was with you the other night. We were saying the N-word. Like, yeah, but you got caught. You got caught. Yes. Now we have to let you go. Because
now
it's about you about to fuck up the money. And that's it. This is capitalism at its finest.
So then on the flip side, so I would have these arguments on radio, and then I get back to my house for the holidays. And my father, I mentioned this once on the podcast. My father has become maniacal on the issue of Dave Chappelle. Maniacal. He is all over him. Okay. And Roy, you have to understand, my dad's a real true school progressive, not like a fraud who's gotten more conservative as time's gone on. He's gotten more progressive as the years have gone on. Like my dad is hardcore with it. And for whatever reason, on this particular issue, he thinks Dave Chappelle, the whole punching down thing, is very true, and he's very angry about it. But there's a couple things he doesn't understand. And I said this, me and my brother got into a screaming, uncomfortable fight. First time my girlfriend has gotten to see that. with my dad at Hanukkah on Sunday. Screaming.
Hanukkah?
Yeah, yeah.
Let Dave Chappelle ruin your Hanukkah.
Dave, you ruined my fucking Hanukkah.
Which day was it?
It was first night.
Oh, first night.
Oh, the kickoff.
Yeah, the kickoff. My mom
first
had
first candle.
First candle, latkes, gelt, presents, the whole nine. And we're screaming because what I said to my dad was, I said, Dad, here's the problem that you're missing a few things. And by the way, I hope my dad doesn't hear this, but my dad is a brilliant man. I think all the good qualities I have performance-wise and thought-wise come from him.
This butt is getting heavy.
Well, but he's not on his fastball anymore. He's 74. He's lost a few. Listen, his fastball used to be 98. Right. It's 91 now. It's 91. Okay, yeah. He can still hit it, but yeah. There are arguments sometimes when me and my brother are both against him. I want to be like, Dad, don't you think as the two young men that you raised in the primes of our life, with the information you gave us, we're probably right and you're now wrong? Don't you trust us enough to know we're the ones that are right? Yeah, we're out here. So what I said to him, though, was I said, Dad, you have no history with Dave Chappelle at all. You don't understand how influential. Do you know that we have heard him talk over the years on specials alone for a combined 24 hours or something? You've never heard him. You're just following a news story. You don't know that he's actually done a lot of positive and really helped a lot of people's thoughts about these issues over the years. Yeah. You're looking at it right now through just this lens, and he has decided he is a bad guy.
Yeah.
And the argument was incredibly frustrating. And then started talking about an article that came out, apparently, to the point Roy was making about the alma mater thing. Apparently, white parents, I think, got offended because Dave was using the N-word in the school.
Yeah. But weren't they naming the theater after him?
Yeah. They had no problem before the closer. They was taking his money. I had no problem with him saying it then.
And now all of a sudden,
he's always said it.
And so my brother and I had to jump up and tell my dad, who knows better than this, Dad, you realize white people have no place talking about how black people should use the N-word, right? That's not our conversation. You don't have to like it. You have every right to say, I don't think anyone should use the N-word. You could think that all you want. But as far as actually out loud legislating that to black people, that's not a thought. Like, this is a waste of time.
And this is first night Hanukkah.
This is first night. We didn't even get to the fucking Shekianu yet. It was insane. Yo, so listen, the thing that happened this week.
Wait one second. I just want to just get a little comedy in. Here's the thing with Roy Wood Jr., man.
Please.
One of my favorite comics. Great guy also. He's let me go on the road with him a couple times. Every time I see him on the bill or he comes up at one of the clubs I'm at, I get excited. He has a special out right now. Now, here's the problem.
It's called Imperfect Messenger on Comedy Central.
Here's the problem. This man, Roy Wood Jr., made a decision in his life. He's in bed with Comedy Central. Uh-oh. It's what it is. He's on The Daily Show. They produce his specials. The content of his specials, the comedy, is immaculate. Comedy Central loves to make it hard for us to find this content.
Bro.
So I wish that everyone will take that extra little step and sign up for whatever the Comedy Central app
is. It's free. Just fucking stream that bitch in front of the paywall on Comedy Central.
I don't want to talk shit about your employer, one of your employers.
That's a fair statement. It is one of the more complicated,
convoluted
places to watch content, which is why they created Paramount Plus. The issue, dog, is that my shit can't go smoothly to Paramount Plus right away because we're still a fucking cable channel, unlike all the other streamers. So you have to have these access windows to all the other regions. So Comedy Central Canada, Europe, Africa, they all got to get their hands on it. Then everybody's got to get their own demand bread from it. Everybody got to make a little money. I got to get pimped out on every corner
before it can be easily available on Paramount.
Then it's available to everybody.
You play it right because you had you did the Daily Show, obviously, and then you took over the What was the Ari?
This is not happening. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Ari. Thank you, Ari, for fumbling that bag.
Yeah, Ari, there was an issue, and they called a lot of issues. You're a company guy like me. I'm a company guy.
Yeah,
I'm a company guy. There's people like us that are reliable, and they call in a mess. And then there's these wild animals out there, and you got to pick which one you are. And sometimes you could be one in one world, one in the other. So you're a Comedy Central comic because you even had a pilot or a TV show you were working on. I don't know if that
they let me shoot that bitch in Birmingham, dog, at a cost that was about $500,000 more than to shoot it in Atlanta.
Bro,
it costs more to shoot it at the crib, and they still greenlit that shit. And that's part of the thing. Like, I know a lot of comedians have come and gone off the Comedy Central brand, right?
Yeah.
But at the time when I got Daily Show, nobody was fucking with me.
Nobody was fucking with you.
Conan O'Brien was the only person that fucked with me on a regular basis.
Right. Mm.
That's it. We were coming off the Steve Byrne sitcom over at TBS, and my nigga, I was in a drought. I was doing Conan, and I was doing ESPN. Also, shout out to ESPN, because they was letting me do live hits, but that don't pay shit. But it's exposure, you know, it's whatever.
Right. It's what were you doing hits on? What were you doing hits on ESPN? Like, I know you were around, but what was it exactly?
I was doing Sports Nation, and then Jamel and Mike Hill had His and Hers. So if I was East Coasting, I would go up to Bristol.
You just made Jamel and Michael Smith a couple, a married couple, and Mike Hill, took on Mike Jamel's Smith.
Mike Hill, that's the other ESPN anchor at the time. He's from Birmingham. But yeah, so they would put me on, and like, you do one thing, then you do all the ESPN radio shows. And so that gave me visibility. So when Comedy Central came knocking, and then they offered me a special off to some of the same jokes that other people had said no to.
Mm.
So you dance with who brought you to the club,
bro? And so your last that's just special what it was amazing. The last one, what's the last one? Father Figure.
Yeah, Father Figure. No One Loves You, and now in Perfect Mess.
Father Figure is fucking amazing, and then now he's got the new one out right now. So I'm just asking our audience. Please take you might get slightly annoyed at the process to find it. Take that little extra step, because I guarantee you it is worth it. This guy writes jokes, man. And my favorite thing about Roy Wood Jr., he's on stage, and all the comics are in the back of the room. They're like, fuck, why didn't I think of that? It was right there. The joke was right. God damn it. And then they go, you see, when they go, who's on the show? Oh, so-and-so. Oh, Roy Wood's going to come by and do 10 minutes. And everyone goes, oh, fuck. And they pull out their notebook and start looking at
it. Like, so he's really like that?
Oh, he's sick with it, yo. Sick.
But he's one of those dudes that has an effect on people like on that level?
Yes.
I'm just trying to just be better every day, man, and just get the jokes tighter. What I need to start doing, though, Sife, I need to stop being as nice to people. Like, I'm...
Go ahead. Okay. What do you mean? Take us through this. By the way, this is a therapy podcast, so go ahead.
I am accessible because when I started out, when I was a young nigga in the game, OGs made themselves accessible to me, and I was better because of that. Right. So that's some be the change you need to see in the world shit, right? But the problem is that as comedians get in trouble, as comedians get canceled, apparently I'm the nigga you reach out to be friends with, to get your reputation back on track.
Really? And
I'll name names off the podcast. Yeah. I'll name names. But like, cats will just, niggas I don't know. We've never spoken before. Right, Who the fuck are you? And it's, hey man, we should get together and I'm doing sets and let me know when you're going up. I want to come around and be around you and like, and hang out. I'm like, bitch, I can't be seen in public with you.
Yeah.
I know cancel culture is a weird thing, but dude, fucking bad reputation, that's real.
Well, and if you're not real, and it's one thing to stand next to someone who you know and care about. It's another thing to just stand next to someone who's been canceled.
Yeah, just cause. Yo, and we're not talking joke shit now. I'm in another lane right now. We're not talking, oh, you said a joke that made people. I'm talking about you've been accused of some wild shit, bro.
Yeah.
Right.
Some of you niggas should borderline be in jail, bro. And well, you think that I'm gonna just go kick it with you at the?
I wonder how you got that rep.
I don't know because I'm nice. I'm too nice.
I get the
I bet I'm you the, niggas don't DM Michael Che asking him to fucking hang with you.
That's because they want to improve their reputation.
Let me tell you my problem. I get all the breakup talks. I get all the sad, the emotional, like, you know, comics have a hard time. I'm therapy guy. But then what happens is we sit and have a couple therapy sessions, and then they start getting funny with me because I now know they told me too much, which I would never say anything. But now they feel weird with me because they've told me too much. And like they think I have something over them.
And now that's a weird
Yo, this guy Roy Wood Jr., man. I said, hey,
have you ever thought that maybe these people after spending a couple of hours talking to you, they'd realize I really don't like him.
Well, every time I have a little therapy session with him, he's stuffing his face.
Yeah.
You give him
why am I getting
advice?
Therapy from this food addict who's raging in front of me?
Roy Wood Jr., I said, hey, man, is there any way I could even just submit myself to The Daily Show without skipping a beat? Here you go. Here's who you hit up. He make a contact. I'll put your name in the hat. And then he gave me the hip hop disclaimer, which I didn't need. But I respect it. He goes, that's the end of my participation. I did what I said. Don't call me for like. And I hit him with
Uncle Paulie. Now I got to turn my back on you.
Bro, you didn't have to say it to me because I know it. But I have to say that to other people. Like, I'm giving you the little in and I'm now out of it. And good luck. And this in is a powerful in.
Right. That in itself is a thing.
Don't keep calling me, asking me what's going on with your tape, what's going on with your resume. Leave me out of it.
You're trying to write a script. Here's three scripts you can look at to help you make your script better. Here's the types of jokes that they do. Put them in a sheet of paper. Some people get hired, some don't. That's because I also don't want to be that dude with Trevor. Hey, man, my homeboy sent you a PDF. Have you looked at it yet? Have you had a chance? Have you read Like, hey, that's not my department, though.
Yeah, man. But anyway, so Roy Wood Jr., go check him out and go watch the special. What's the special called again?
I appreciate that, brother. It's
Imperfect Messenger.
Yeah, Imperfect Messenger. Very good. All right, so anyway.
So here's what happened this week.
Yeah.
So did either of you see the Bone Thugs 3-6 versus?
Oh, I watched it live.
Okay,
it's the only. It's one of the few verses that I not only did I watch it live, bro, watched it live on my television.
Right, you
pulled it up on the YouTube. Smart TV.
So this is why the conversation's perfect. Because number one, there's some specific things from it that are worth talking about because they're just funny, and then number two, there's the fact that Syfe, did you watch it for a second?
I didn't even know it happened. Okay.
Syfe didn't know it even happened. And then for me.
South and Midwest, because you East Coast bias.
Syfe, let's embrace it. This is where we're going. And I turned it on. I watched for a combined 2 minutes. And I went, damn, all my East Coast bias, it was fucking right. Good night. And turned the shit off. Said, this is so bullshit.
Never show love. To the Midwest and the South versus.
That's not me. Bro, we had David Banner on this show because he was on some other other person's show, and he bigged me up for supporting the South in the early days when nobody was supporting the South. So don't put me in your little East Coast box.
That's why I think Syfe's in the middle ground.
Syfe broke a lot of Southern records.
Syfe's a good balance between where me and you will probably live, I think. So here's the thing I want to get to.
I'm super biased because I did morning. So 3-6 came through Birmingham on the regular.
Yeah. I was going to say. If 2000 you were doing,
through 2012.
Syfe, here's the tweet now that I also want to use as something to get to in this conversation. Okay. Someone sent me a DM, I should say. It said, can't believe the disrespect for 3-6 that I heard on the show. I love East Coast rap too. But 3-6 is Wu-Tang of the South. Those songs that y'all never heard of makes me question your hip hop knowledge. Respectfully, be safe. So first of all, Roy, what were just your thoughts on the verses? We'll just start there. Just give us the Roy Wood review. Roy's review of what we saw.
Blanket. It was a beautiful walk down hip hop memory lane. I appreciated all of the features. In the cameos, I could have lived without Terrence Howard coming out and singing "Hard Out Here for a Pimp."
Thank you for saying.
I mean, no, but they got.
Even though technically it's his song, He is the artist. He's
got
DJ.
Them an Oscar. He got them an Oscar. Like,
yes. But the song ain't good. I mean, I'm sorry.
I'm a little shy.
I mean, we're listening to this song now in the era of caring about women and post pussy hat marches. Yes, it is hard out here for a gentleman exploiting women. You should well, not but even do then, that.
But by the way, even when the movie came out, I always found that song at the time. I loved that movie, but I found the music that they made for the movie sounded like a parody of the music at the time.
Whoop That Trick is a pop. That's like proper fight era hit a motherfucker.
Rosenberg, no, Whoop That Rosenberg Trick is close. That
he didn't get cast as the white producer in the movie.
That's it. Nah, it's like you'd never fuck with It's Hard Out Here for a Pimp.
Not as a song, but as a song. In the movie, yeah.
Like it was fine, but it was cartoonish. And I thought at the time,
going into
got him an Oscar. I can't.
No doubt.
Going into it, I knew number one that Bone was not going to have the catalog to go against 3-6. Bone really only had, in my humble opinion, two solid albums, and then they had a couple of sprinklings of features and you know solo hits or whatever. I thought that the tempos of their music is like, it was somebody tweeted, I can't find the tweet now, it's too late, but they basically said this Versus was a mismatch because Bone makes music for niggas that want to smoke weed and chill. 3-6 makes music for niggas who drink hard liquor and want to fight.
Beautifully
and
so.
And go ahead.
And so the vibe of it was off. Like after a couple of songs, I was like, I don't know if this is the right vibe. And then, you know, Busy Bone being Busy Bone, I don't know if, you know, he's talked about his issues with mental health in the past or whatever. So him starting a little fight or whatever. But as a Southern hip hop fan who grew up on like Ball and MJG and UGK and Ghetto Boys and Big Mike and Crime Boss and like all of that shit, to see LeChat, to see Project Pat, like I love the fact that I get to see some of my hip hop heroes grow old, because that's the one thing these youngins ain't got, man. The way these young rappers get shot, like I hurt for them because I don't know what they're gonna have when they're 40 and 50 years old, you know. But it was a cool walk down memory lane. Bone didn't really put shit into their performance. I thought 3-6 just washed them, but like to hear all those songs again in a row, like I was walking around the house singing, dog.
Now,
and I don't really fuck with verses like that.
Let me ask you a question, Peter and Roy. That what to what you just said earlier about East Coast awareness of this. Was this an East Coast person, maybe Swiss or his camp, putting together what we think is the right matchup? How an East Coast person would look at Bone Thugs and 3-6 as almost the same thing as an East Coast person. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's group versus group. You have to do that.
But the vibe, but they not the same vibe though. If you if you're from the South or the Midwest, you'd be like,
why?
I want to watch it because I fuck with them, but they're not comparable. Like
no, it wasn't. It wasn't. But what other hip hop group in the South do you have that?
I don't know if it has to be. I think I would have liked a UGK, even though Pimp C's not there, but Bun could have held it down.
I think
UGK would have got hella features.
UGK 3-6 would have been more interesting to me.
And you can still play Pimp C shit because Versus has now become this whole big performance thing, but really it was started off as just playing the song and vibing out to it. So you could still do all Pimp shit. Or Bun is so smart, he would have had some people do Pimp's parts or something. You know what I mean?
The eras don't match up, but I feel like an East Coast equivalent, correct me if I'm wrong, it would be like De La versus The Wu.
Right, you mean
kind
like...
What happened with 3-6? Like, because De La isn't on the same shit as The Wu, but they're a group.
Right. Yeah.
And they were a popular group, and they had a lot of good albums that everybody appreciated. And I think that was just that was the metric of deciding, you know, who to match up with who. Because, I mean, you could have easily have done Goody Mob versus Bone if you wanted the same vibe. You know, like that one is a little more interesting, but I think if you're gonna do that, you probably should just do like the whole Dungeon Family versus somebody else. I think No Limit Cash Money is probably the only Southern matchup that I really think you East Coast niggas would really appreciate and have an opinion about. Like I don't even think y'all cared about Nelly Ludacris, if we're gonna be honest.
No,
y'all care about Nelly Luda?
Yeah, of course.
Too early. It was too early.
I was into it, but hold on. Let me stop here. This is where I need to get a little more specific and one ep nerdy about it all.
Okay, here we go.
I went through the list of songs. I didn't, if I'm being honest, me, Laura, and Ebro, we didn't get till I think round 7 until all three of us knew both songs being played in the round. Now, I'm not saying that proudly. Hold on, I'm not saying that. And let me be clear.
That's fair. There were some Bone songs I didn't know. It was a lot of B-sides.
By the way, the first time, I've never seen this in my life. On one of the recap websites where they go song for song, one of the Bone songs, they just had empty quote marks, okay? So this is... So don't...
Was that when Busy fought?
Yeah, I guess it might have been when Busy fought. So I have people coming at me and saying I was like completely disrespecting because I didn't know a bunch of these records. And I do admit, my knowledge of Hypnotized Minds, 3-6, Gangsta Boo, the entire thing, yeah, it was not for me at the time. As a backpacker, like, there, to me, Scythe, you were either, if you fucked with that shit and you were from the East Coast, you were either a club person, like you were in the clubs DJing, and particularly mm-hmm. even like you went down to the South and DJed, like you were out mm-hmm. and about, or you're one of those white kids who ironically likes, you know, the most hood shit you can find.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's, I was
like
neither,
looking at it like as art, kind
of. And I was neither of those people. Like, I was right. not into club shit, and I wasn't into the most hood sounding shit imaginable if it musically to me was whatever. So I guess my question is, Roy, am I an asshole for thinking that while the 3-6...
He's got an ESPN voice on right now. I can hear him.
3-6 versus Wu-Tang, right? Here's what I'll say, and I want you both to respond. 3-6 is more, wait for it, more influential in terms of today's sound than Wu-Tang Clan.
Absolutely.
But in terms of iconic status as a hip-hop group, 3-6 is not even close to on the level as Wu-Tang Clan, in my opinion.
And that reasoning is because of the East Coast bias that exists, because the Wu is the Wu and they're from New York, and New York is heralded as this ho-ho-ho-ho-ho-ho hip-hop mecca. They're already graded on the curve. 3-6 also popped at an era where the South still was. Andre 3000 hadn't even got on stage at the Source Awards yet, and 3-6, half their songs came out before that moment.
True.
So
I mean, we
all the big ones came later.
Roy, we started it. You got to give us something.
No, I understand that, but I'm saying the reasoning for that, 3-6's influence, the influence that the Southern sound has influenced hip hop nationally, 3-6 is an integral part of that.
Yes,
but I'm saying that a lot of the songs that you did not know, I'm looking at the song list now. Like,
oh, you have it? Can you send it to us in the group chat? In the chat?
Yeah. So it's like, if you look at Hit a Motherfucker, like that was an underground hit. Fucking Tear the Club Up 97.
That was
underground. But that was even in 97, though. That song wasn't it, like, folks were still on Master P in 97. Master P was the one Southerner.
Well, no, they were just getting
and Cass.
Practically. No, correct. That was mid. That was, he was in the middle of it.
Yeah, what? That's what second. That's Ghetto D at that point.
Bout It's already been out and etc.
So y'all not gonna have all of these Southern niggas up here on getting all.
But
hold on,
but do you think that from a musical standpoint, and Scythe, I'd love for you to weigh into, like, do you actually think that musically, rap wise, I'm not talking production, but rap wise, do you think that 3-6 is on the level with the Wu-Tang albums that we think about and the Wu-Tang music that we
look at? Lyrics? You talking about lyrics?
Yeah, the skills, not just a sound and an aura.
There ain't but like 4 Southerners that could go bar for bar. That's why the Wu never did any Southern features, because nobody wanted the niggas to outshine them.
That's a different skill set. I don't know if you can even
skew it on the Barbie. What else we got?
Because like, even when you mentioned Dungeon Family earlier, Dungeon Family like proclaims that they were trying to copy New York. That's why they were like so strict about the lyrics and all that shit. You know what I mean? So like they, the Dungeon Family, the producers, the Organized Noize was such fans of 90s hip hop that they were trying to create that vibe, but in the South. So even the guy who we proclaim as one of the greatest ever, Andre 3000, came from an East Coast influence.
Of course. Like
comparing the rap lyrical skill level from 3-6 to Wu or whatever, it's just a different category. You know what I'm saying? It's like baseball and football. Those are different, right? Those are
there
different.
There you go. Things. Good job, Sife. I guess I just get, I don't know whether I should feel bad about not knowing some of these records. Like, well, why not though, Roy? If I think of myself as a true hip hop connoisseur who loves it all, shouldn't I listen, I know their biggest five, but that's all I know. I don't know after the biggest five joints.
Because the songs that I know that they were giving you shit about, you know, something like Who Run It, which they started out with, then Tear the Club Up, then, you know, Sipping on Some Scissor Up, everybody knows that
one. No, Who Run It is fire.
I don't know who run it.
You don't know Who Run It?
No.
Now, see, that's a problem. So now we're getting into songs that charted in Southern radio during that era. And so...
Okay, maybe I do know it.
Who run it is it?
And maybe I do know it.
But Round 7, Gangsta Boo, Where Them Dollars At, that did not... I know that that didn't billboard nationally, and I doubt that that got spins north of Richmond. So it's possible that you didn't know those. I think that it's possible that some songs just fall through the cracks. I mean, hell, I was in radio, but I wasn't DJing, so I didn't need to know every single song to have a Southern set. Right. I'll be honest. When the E-40 verses, I didn't know half of them E-40 songs.
Oh, no, no. Yeah.
But I also wasn't deep on West Coast hip-hop in the 90s and the early 2000s because I was in the South. We were doing our thing, so it was very insular. So if something snuck in from the outside, I'll be 100. I didn't even really start fucking with E-40 hard until he started fucking with Master P. Mm. And when 40 came on features, like I think it was Unbounded, the movie soundtrack. Mm. I think 40 did some stuff there. And then he did the Baller Blocking soundtrack with Cash Money in the late 90s. I was like, okay, let me go rock with his back catalog.
That's so crazy. And Baller Blocking to me is literally just like an ad that I saw and was like, what's Baller Blocking? I didn't even register with me. It was just
Baller Blocking us.
It was just amongst the crazy Southern ads that were in all the magazines. And you'd be like, what? Now, listen, when you go to the popular songs for 3-6 Mafia, we know the only one I don't know is the last one, which might be newer, Lolly Lolly. But the first four are Stay Fly, Sipping on Some Syrup, Popping My Collar and Slob on My Knob. Okay.
That's but canon. Yes, that's Southern canon. Like that's Southern the type canon.
That's all fair. But I don't know, man. I guess I just like I can't just ignore. Like we were having a serious conversation. It was Chickenhead. You see, hey Roy, what's the round? It's Chickenhead versus what? It's maybe like round 10 or something. What's Chickenhead up against? It's a good
whoop whoop.
And like I remember, like, do I enjoy Chickenhead? Yes, I had the record. I played it. But it was definitely ironic to like I think it's a fucking ridiculous song.
Chickenhead versus Thuggish Ruggish Bone.
Okay, and Thuggish Ruggish Bone. I fucking thought when Thuggish Ruggish Bone came out, I was like, is this chorus a parody of what people think rap choruses are supposed to sound like? I thought it was ridiculous. You liked it?
Love it.
You didn't fuck with it at the time?
No.
So then you didn't fuck with Bone.
Yeah, you didn't fuck with Bone.
That was their only fucking hit at the time. Well, it was their first record. It was the first single, but literally, it was cool. But when it got to the chorus and she was like, "It's a thuggish, ruggish bone," I was like, "What is this? Are y'all making fun of rap?"
To Tasha,
I'm not saying it in a race way because we have this conversation.
Oh, here we go again.
No.
I'm not playing the race card.
I'm not saying it in a race way. I'm just saying it in a cultural way. Sometimes Peter doesn't get those type of hooks and songs where like backyard barbecue from backyard barbecue to church vibes. You know what I mean? The type of extra singing. No, this is fire. I don't know what
you're
talking about.
Bro, do you understand? This song brought gangs together for 3 minutes in Birmingham. GDs and Vice Lords would put their rags down for just 3 minutes.
Listen, I respect the fuck out of Bone.
That shit right there.
I respect the fuck out of Bone as rappers. Again, also super influential stylistically. They have records I really do enjoy. By the way, even Thuggish Ruggish Bone, I fuck with it. I just find the chorus to be like,
but slightly farcical. Like the song. This issue is about you having a whole ass blind spot to the records even existing. I'm okay with you not liking it. You not like the song. That's all in the game. But
by the way, let's do any of us, can we go over the Bone songs in this and see how many of those songs any of the three of us know?
Okay.
As three rap fans from that era, two DJs and one radio personality?
Do that right now because I didn't see it. So tell me the songs because I'll tell you.
I am biased because I was a Bone fan. Their first two albums for me were end to end. East 1999 Eternal and Art of War. Art of War, it was a double album. So there was a couple of, you could put that shit on somebody's movie soundtrack. But I knew most of the Bone songs. What I didn't know was a lot of their solo shit.
And I'm going to be honest,
none of their solo albums.
I'm going to be honest with our audience right now because I've never lied to you and I never will. And I don't know what Sife's going to say. I have never, and I repeat never, put a Bone CD in a CD player and hit play. Never.
You talking about the solo joints or Bone albums?
No Bone album, including East 99 Eternal, did I ever hit play on.
Fuck!
Was only eight tracks, bitch.
I know,
it wasn't even a long album.
I knew all the singles, though. I knew the whole thing, almost.
As a hip-hop DJ, you gotta go. I'm not a huge Bone fan. I like Bone a lot, but I'm not this hardcore fan like a lot of people are. But you gotta go through the East 99 album. Like,
by the way, it's more than eight songs. It's a lot longer than I remember.
Because
for the love of money,
you understand the relevance. Eazy-E's son, right?
Eazy-E's son came out on stage and did his father's verse.
Everyone knows for the love of money. I'm not an animal.
Dope.
No, I love for the love of money.
You understand the significant relevance of Bone, though.
Of course, without a doubt.
Being that significant, you don't want to just hear it one time.
But I heard them so much. I lived in D.C. Their singles were all in rotation, but none of them made me go, "Oh, I need to hit play on track one." Like, by the way, even Crazy Bone, all the way up to Crazy Bone Thug Mentality. I know all the singles, but it never. Let me put it this way.
And this is an issue with
the kind of Carhartt girl that was listening to Bone Thugs and Harmony, the kind of Carhartt girl that was listening to strictly Bone Thugs, Sife.
Yeah.
We were friends in school, but we weren't hanging out after school.
that's a perfect.
Because she smoked weed.
That's just typical Carhartt.
That's regular Carhartt girl. The Bone Thugs Carhartt girl might be going a step further. Some extra crazy shit was happening.
Yeah. Because Carhartt girl is there's some baseline similarities to all Carhartt girls. But now we're more accustomed to listening to Carhartt girls that can spit Mobb Deep and
right. This is different though.
There are Carhartt girls that can spit Bone songs.
Let me put it this way. The Carhartt girl, Sife, who when you got in her car, the first thing you saw was East 99 Eternal. She had a lot of problems at home. There were things happening in the house.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? She wasn't just rebelling. There were problems in the house. She was smoking weed in the house.
This is like me and a lot of curried foods.
A lot of what?
Curry.
Okay.
Oh, Roy, now, see, this is why I fuck with Roy Wood Jr.
Break it down to food.
Go ahead.
If something has curry in it, my antennas go up. I go, all right, what the fuck kind of curry? What is it?
It's my man.
Type of food. All right, I'm going to nibble it, but I see a lot of people enjoying curry. It is on menus everywhere. But I don't generally fuck with something if it's curry, because usually it's too aggressive. It's too much on my fucking senses. So, and apparently if you ask for curry on the side, you're an asshole. That's impossible.
Mm-hmm.
So more often than not, it's just not my lane.
Okay.
Apparently I'm the same way. See why I fuck with this guy?
I don't even understand where he's going yet.
Is your curry.
Right.
It's that like slow. Do you even like laid back chill rap? Because Bone Thugs' general vibe is very, I was broke,
I had to rob niggas. I sold fake dope. They constantly talking about selling dummy sacks and they lyrics. Crazy Bone has a whole song dedicated to talking to how you make fake crack. I forget the name of it. The whole song, he's walking you through like a Rachel Ray recipe. You take the crumbs and then you rub it up, then you put a little glue out. I'll find the lyrics and just recite them to you. But their whole vibe is, I was broke, times were hard. And then the other vibe of most Bone songs is, let's just fucking chill. That's
right.
Those are their two lanes. So if you don't fuck with that type of curry, there is no Bone track that would have ever drawn you in. It seems like, but you know the ones, like you know the hits, okay, the love of money. So why would you ever even need to know the B-sides? You shouldn't know Bud Smokers Only.
Yeah, and I guess I didn't, the truth is, if I'm being honest, I didn't have anyone in my life who was pushing me on Bone album cuts. Like, oh, you haven't listened? I didn't. In my little East Coast world, no one was saying, you got to listen to all the Bone records. You know, I was excited when Premier did First of the Month remix. You know, it's a different thing. And I'm just trying to be honest with everyone about, you know, here's the. Down the East and West Coast. Down the East and West Coast. Down the East and West Coast. So what do you,
Dummy
what'd
you find?
Here we go. It's called
Dummy
what?
Man. Dummy Man. And it's just his idea. It's just a whole song about how he sells fake dope. And that's what he did. Up in the morning, I feel like I don't want to be living. Better off dead with no bread. You ever had that feeling? Fuck that. Come up in my blood because it's the first of the month. First time to come up. But I was standing in the bathroom mirror. I looked at the soap. Shit. Soap look a little like dope. Then I chopped me up some counterfeit amphetamines. But wait a minute. What if they want to taste it? Think quickly for cash. Nigga, dash to the kitchen, get the bread bag, wrap that bread around some soap. Now the bread crumb, dumb, dumb, dope. So you take soap, bread crumbs, and some amphetamines. And that's how you make a fake crack rock, courtesy of Crazy Bone. Like, this man was in pain. I can't think of any. This is 1999, by the way, when this song was released.
Yo, and I never, ever, never, ever in life, of all the random hip hop things I've heard about, all the shit, you know, that Mobb Deep used to warn us of and talk about that I never understood. Like, oh, when you're going to visit a girl and the likelihood of you being set up, right? Things that I didn't think about in Chevy Chase, Maryland. I never thought about making fake dope before. So I was missing something. Roy?
Their albums, yo, they made whole albums talking about selling fake dope and robbing people. Like, it just, I don't know, as a Southerner, there was a grit to that. So there was a relatability to that. Bone, lyrically, the lack of optimism in some of the songs, it was very relatable. When you're coming off of Ghetto Boys and all of that shit.
I guess with Bone, okay, so I have two different, vocally, neither 3-6 nor Bone speaks to me that much. Like Bone can in moments, you know, but when I always make fun of, for example, you know, when Biggie and Bone do their thing, everyone knows Biggie's verse by heart. And then when it gets to Bone and it sounds like this, a 7 a.m. in the morning, it's dope. It's like it's dope, but I can't memorize it. I can just sort of be like, yeah. It's just not the same, which, by the way, is a testament to their talent, by the way. It's like a different art form altogether, if we're being honest.
Busy threw a jab at 3-6 in the middle of that song that a lot of people fucking miss.
Where?
666 Mob was spitting fire. This the real truth, bitch. It's in Busy's verse right after Biggie. Because they had been beefing with 3-6 during that time. So it's like, I enjoyed the deciphering of it. Like, it was almost like coded in a way. Like, it was like trying to listen to like, you know how they listen to them rock records backwards or whatever?
Yeah.
It was fun to find, well, back in those days, the lyrics would be in the CD liners or whatever, but it was fun to listen over and over again to Bone
and pick up what they were saying. There was, I don't know, there was something fun in deciphering it. It's the same reason I enjoyed listening to Twister. Twister and Mystical. Now, that's a versus I would love. It's Twister versus Mystical.
By the way, you just, you just came up on a gem. Twister and Mystical would be great.
Nobody would understand shit. The verses would be 40 minutes.
Well, and also Twister would have a tough spot when Mystical gets to his smashes. It's that's a tough.
Oh, yeah. You just do that for the love of hip-hop, just although to see two OGs.
Although Twister does have a few, though. Let's be clear.
Oh, of course. I mean, if Twister keeps slow jams in the clip, that can
you know what you know what my you know what my sleeper favorite Mystical record is?
Really?
Like, it's just one of my favorite. I'll be honest though, it's one of my favorite Neptune's records more than it is favorite Mystical records.
Somebody told me that the music that song sounds like a Zatarain's commercial, and I can't unhear it because it's so uniquely New Orleans.
Wait, what's a what's Zatarain's?
Zatarain's, that seasoning, that Cajun seasoning. Spice it up with Zatarain's,
Yo, no, never seen that commercial in my life, much like a East 99 Turner. And also, I will say this. It does, the horn is almost like a caricature of New Orleans sound. Yes, right. That is.
But it works for some reason.
But it works. This was when his run of hits at that point with the Neptunes was so crazy. What years were you on radio?
01 till 2013.
So yeah. You got in. So I guess like on the tail end of Mystical being the shit.
Yeah. Mystical. He was already Mystical at that point. He'd done Mind of Mystical.
He's on his way out already.
Yeah, he'd already done his No Limit album at that point.
No, he'd already done that. This was already 2 years old, I think. Yeah. By then, right?
Yeah. Yeah, because that was off of Unpredictable, which to me is still, I would argue, the best Mystical album, even though I enjoy Mind of Mystical, because I think artists, before they get the deal, there's something raw about them.
Bro, your knowledge, your detailed knowledge of Southern hip hop is already high level relative to anyone we talk to.
Bro, that's all we used to listen to. My dog, Ahmed Roach, the only thing non-Southern we used to fuck with was Eazy-E, Eazy Does It. Everybody fuck with N.W.A. Like this is gonna blow you away.
Yeah.
I didn't hear a Wu-Tang track until I was 18 in college, and that's because I had a roommate from Wisconsin.
Wait, but hold on. What year was that? 18 in college.
This was 96.
So you hadn't heard one in 94.
I never heard a single bar of a Wu-Tang artist.
You had never heard Cream or Method Man. You didn't know the song
Nothing.
No, it's impossible. You didn't know
MTV.
Method
what? Okay, Yo MTV Raps might have played some shit, but in terms of like getting deep into the B-sides and Mystery of Chess Boxing and all of the Kung Fu interludes to that, man, I didn't know what the. I rolled over, looked at my roommate one more. I go, what the fuck is this you're listening to, dog?
So real quick, how well, relative to these Southern albums, do you know Enter the Wu-Tang and Only Built for Cuban Linx, etc.?
Not nearly. I don't think, I'm probably better than you are with Bone Thugs, but
not
much. I could know the song, but there's no way I can name the tracks and albums. That I can go, oh yeah, that song is from that track, but it was originally on a music soundtrack, but I can't do that.
You don't know, like,
I can't do that.
You don't know the order of the singles, though, and what came out when.
Fuck no.
What about with Mob
Deep?
Hey, you know what? Let's take a break here and go to Patreon for more with Roy Wood Jr. And if you're leaving us, make sure you go watch his special right now. You can stream it on the Comedy Central app. But more with Roy Wood Jr. on Patreon.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessionals, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.